welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Henrik. This is Red Ice Radio. RedIce.tv is the website. You can catch our show on YouTube and, of course, the radio version of the show. The podcast we also have on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and we have RSS feeds on the website, so you can add it to your favorite, you know, podcatcher app. If you want the show on the go on your phone or tablet or whatever the heck people use these days. Anyway, today on the show with us, we have Jim Goad. He's the author of The Redneck Manifesto, a number of other books we'll talk more about. He's also a writer at Tacky's Mag. That's tackymag.com. Thank you for coming on the show, Jim. Good to have you here.
Likewise. Thank you, sir. Greetings from Georgia.
I've heard about your work, or I've come across your work. I think it was a couple of years ago, actually, both writing at Tacky Mag, a number of other places as well. So it's great to have you on the show, finally kind of catch you, if you will. So before we get into talking about some of the articles and some of the kind of current events, just for anybody who's unfamiliar with your work, if they're new to you, how would you describe yourself? Tell us about some of your background if you want to.
I think fundamentally I'm a skeptic. My dad was a plumber, grew up working class, and to use a term that leftist Jew, it informed a lot of my experience being working class and being from Philadelphia, which is a crass, foul place. So that helped form my aesthetic. But a quarter century ago, I published a magazine called Answer Me. There were four issues, caused all kinds of havoc and chaos, led to an obscenity trial. It was blamed for Francisco Martin Duran firing 29 bullets at the White House in late 94. He quoted a line from it. Three British neo-Nazis killed themselves, one of whom sent me her life savings and tried contacting me before she killed herself. All sorts of weirdness. In the third issue, which was focused on suicide, my wife at the time, we prank called Dr. Jack Kevorkian, the suicide doctor. She said she had ovarian cancer. How did she kill herself? We reprinted the transcript of the prank call. 4 years later, she died of ovarian cancer. Kurt Cobain allegedly read the suicide issue. The centerfold was a shotgun suicide. He received it and read it about 2 months before he killed himself with a shotgun. All sorts of, it was a cursed publication in a lot of ways, but over the next month we're coming out with, for the first time ever, all four issues in one volume. And if it caused all that shit 25 years ago, I can't imagine what's going to happen now. I'm bracing myself. Things got a lot worse. I didn't expect them to, but they got much more uptight.
Yeah, it's kind of a bizarre reality we find ourselves in, to be honest, at the moment. We'll get into some of this. Of course, you're as I said, the author of The Redneck Manifesto as well. Just tell us a little bit about that book.
I grew up, you're exposed to media, and I think the person who had more of an influence over American culture in the 1970s than anyone was Norman Lear, who produced a bunch of sitcoms, All in the Family and Maude and Good Times and The Jeffersons. And so I just absorbed this and became a liberal, because that's what you were taught. That you were taught that's what reality was. I worked for the Los Angeles Reader, and I started noticing that these people were generally from much wealthier backgrounds than I was. But I also noticed they had this tendency to just fetishize. At the time in the late 80s, the big topic was the Amazon rainforest, and Sting and Peter Gabriel were all doing benefits for it. And they were crying crocodile tears over what was happening to these indigenous Amazonians, while laughing at, say, a bunch of white trash accidentally happened to live over a toxic waste dump out in Riverside, California, and all died of cancer. And I wondered, like, why are they so compassionate about this group that they shit on poor white people? And that's a phenomenon Charles Dickens described as telescopic philanthropy. He observed how the British society matrons had boundless, compassion, risk-free compassion for starving black children, while there was like a four-year-old white kid cleaning their chimney. And so I started to research. When I got married for the first time in Vegas in 1987, we looked in the phone book and there was a Reverend Goad, Reverend Walker Goad. So I said, all right, let's get this guy to marry us. And it was in a trailer park, Tropicana Mobile Home Park. And I'd never even met either grandfather. And I had a vague sense of my ancestry. I was told I was Irish. I didn't even know the etymology of Goad. He said they were English and they were initially brought as convict laborers. So I started delving into, I'm accused of white privilege and the legacy of slavery, but I started reading into it, and books such as They Were White and They Were Slaves by Michael A. Hoffman, who's sort of a genius and doesn't get nearly the credit for laying the intellectual groundwork for a lot of stuff that's known as alt right now.
I agree.
Extensively documented book about the history of white slavery in the colonies. And what struck me, too, is across the political spectrum, I guess, Hoffman would be considered an anti-Semite, whatever that is, and far right. But you had Marxist historians such as Howard Zinn and Eugene Genovese saying the exact same thing, that the majority of whites who were brought here were brought under some form of bondage. And in a lot of cases, they were treated worse. And I try to make clear in the book, it's not a competition, but if you guys can pull the camera back and see that similar things are going on, you might not be at each other's throats so much. The book got criticized for being Marxist. I guess it was a materialistic examination of history, but a lot of this stuff happened to white people that's completely buried. And I figured the book would be a huge hit because look at all this history that's been buried, and it presents an entirely different picture. Simon & Schuster did not like the book. It was squashed by the publicity person. I think it's in its 17th printing now, so despite their efforts to derail it, it's still selling. But that got me, as a liberal who constantly, I grew tired of being bashed for what are essentially accidents of birth, you know, male genitalia and pale skin. And I started realizing that a lot of the anti-white whites were richer ones. And I sort of concluded, or at least speculated, this was guilt projection, that the whites that were likely to be descended from slave owners were blaming the whites that were likely to be descended from indentured servants for the legacy of racism and slavery and everything else. And I realized over the years the main theme in my writing is guilt projection, so that's usually where I focus. My book, Shit Magnet, was not about race, it was more about gender and how women can be egregiously violent and abusive and get away with it because they're women, and there's this idea that they're just fighting back against the history of oppression. So yeah, I mean, I'm white defensively. I mean, pride, I'm more of an individual, but I'm not going to be scapegoated or taxed or blamed or beaten up for my skin color. And unlike a lot of these guys, I've actually fought anti-racist skinheads in the streets. I've been to prison. I see how people naturally self-segregate there and get along. That was what was amazing about prison. I was there 2.5 years, maximum and minimum security, 3 fights. And over card games.
right.
Yeah, I mean, you get there the first day and you see guys with 100% peckerwood tattooed on their throat, and they're playing cards with Crips. Everyone gets along, but they also naturally self-segregate. You go to the chow hall, it's completely segregated. And it was interesting to me that there was sort of a stasis because of that. Everyone understood that they were tribal, but as long as that was cool, everyone got along. And also, it was Oregon was overwhelmingly white, so I think there was less racial tension because if you fucked with a peckerwood, you'd have an ocean of sunshine drowning you. So I'm also interested in statistics like that. It seems when whoever's dominant is ambiguous, that's when most of the racial conflict is. If there's one group completely in charge, things seem to cool out a little bit. But, I mean, just being raised Catholic and battered by nuns, I also gravitated toward taboos. And obviously discussing race with any smidgen of honesty is taboo these days. It's just one lecture. It's not a conversation. It's a fucking hectoring, scolding lecture. And there's something in me that that bristles against that. And all kinds of moralism and self-righteousness. So that's where I'm coming from, in case anyone wants to know. A working-class white guy who got blamed for history that I had no hand in. I probably would have been an oppressor. I would have liked the chance. But it's like being accused of cheating. At least, you know, then provide me with the girl to fuck. I mean, if you're going to accuse me of being oppressor, give me some money or at least the ability to oppress.
Well, you got to just access your knapsack of blank checks and credit cards, right? Isn't that what they're trying to push on people now?
I think the average American taxpayer, according to the U.S. debt clock, is indentured to about $1 million right now.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my privilege, is working from January 1st to late April every month, every year, just to pay off the government. Yeah. I don't see the privilege in that. And so and maybe it's autism, or I just have this, if the pictures don't fit, I stand up and say something. My brother tells me, I always tell the story, but it's a great story. First day of grade school, I was still 5, I went to Catholic school. A nun wrote something on the blackboard. I stood up and corrected her spelling. And she told me to sit down, and I said, I will when you correct it. And I got sent to the principal's office. So in one way or another, that's been my life ever since.
Well, Jim, let's talk a bit about, you had a story up on Tacky Mag called Laughing About White Genocide, which detailed, of course, this one just crazy professor at Drexel George Cicerello mayor. And this is kind of what's interesting about the situation, that it's gone so nuts in the last few years, really. This has really gone over the edge. And these people are now pushing so hard. And it's just quite out in the open. I mean, we always do this comparison, of course, but imagine that this was, the other way around, right? This was.
I'm 55. I know how the goalposts have been changed over the long arc of my lifetime. Back in the 60s, it was like racist meant you wanted to kill somebody because they were different than you. Now it's just noticing differences, especially with this white genocide shit. On one hand, they're openly, eagerly applauding. It's like, in one generation, fuck you, you won this time. You're going to be drowned out. Non-whites are going to reproduce. You're going to die out. And they're laughing and clapping. But then if you just mention it, they're like, oh, you're paranoid. It's like, fuck you, don't gaslight me, because then you'll have an enemy for life. Gaslighting, I think, is one of the cruelest things that humans can do to each other. On the one hand, you're obviously cheering for this, but when it's mentioned, when it's noted, you call that person insane and paranoid. Fuck you. That, like I said, that's how to become an enemy, lifelong enemy of mine.
Yeah, he said, all I want for Christmas is white genocide. And then he doubled down and actually went further and said, to clarify, when the whites were massacred during the Haiti Revolution, that was a good thing indeed. And you actually written about this, of what happened in Haiti, haven't you?
Well, I took a picture when the Haiti earthquake happened 5 years ago. I took a, like, you take any picture of Port-au-Prince, it's the same. It's like a bomb went off. So I took the same picture. I put Haiti before the earthquake and then Haiti after the earthquake. How the fuck can you tell the difference, like, when a massive earthquake? It said, look that way before the earthquake. And this guy said it was a very good thing indeed. Has he been to Haiti? Has he been to anywhere that's majority black on Earth? And why aren't they, is it just that the same joke, all these people threatening to move to Canada because you're offended that he said something bad about Mexico? Why are you not going to Mexico then? Why is your immediate impulse to go somewhere even whiter? If these people, like, actually practice what they preach and move to an African country or a black neighborhood, I'd respect them more, but they don't. And this all feeds into me. And I think Steve Saylor said the same thing. It has nothing to do with non-whites. It's this moral status jockeying among white people and, trying to leave one group holding the bag for history. When the group, poor whites really didn't do much historically as far as oppressing anyone. They didn't have the chance or the opportunity. So that's why I talk about it. But, some smacked ass like this is a communist, an avowed communist, the most murderous fucking belief system in world history, thinks it was a good thing. Then move to fucking Haiti. Otherwise, you're a liar. And they need to, calling out. They need to be called out on this shit. They need debate. They won't fucking debate. That's one thing I've noticed 25 years, the massive shit that's been talked about, everything I write. Only been one person who ever accepted a challenge. I will threaten them. I'm like, hey, let's have it, we can do it over Skype so you won't get assaulted. Only one person ever did, and it was a tranny who freaked out over a Gavin McInnes article. And it was respectful, but we didn't change each other's opinion, but I respected the fact that they at least had that conversation. But then subsequently, this tranny tried to get the entire website cut down, rallied for advertisers to boycott the website, while calling Gavin's article violent, which is fascinating to me, especially with the trannies. Any disagreement is framed as violence. I've experienced severe violence my entire life from in the womb. My dad tried to abort me by punching my mom in the stomach. I know violence. And I'm a writer. I know words. I know the fucking difference. These people don't know the difference, so they even switch them. This tranny called Gavin's article violent. I edited the article. I went over it. There was nothing violent about it. I mean, the closest thing, I'm actively searching for violence here. And he says, well, they have a high suicide rate. I guess if you kill yourself violently, that's violent. But there was no advocacy of violence against trannies. As luck would have it, within days, the same tranny who called the article violent told another tranny on Facebook to cut themselves, drink bleach, die in a fire, fuck you, cunt, go die. It's like, well, that's a little violent, And, I realize so much is projection. With a lot of these virtue signalers and moralists, they're some nasty and malicious motherfuckers. So I think in a lot of cases, it's projection. I mean, these people talk about race. People are just absolutely up the ass, obsessed with race. Crying about racism all the time. They can't think in any other terms but racial terms, but they're worried about racism.
Yeah, and I think as well that the hate that they have inside, They can cloak it as in this appearance of love or tolerance or something, but to genuinely deny a functional human emotion, which has been part of our makeup for since the beginning, hatred, it serves a function. To deny us that, I think it creates some kind of weird individuals, to be honest.
It's an evolutionary adaptation to hate. You hate whatever threatens your survival. That's just natural and understandable. But they're so filled with hate, and that's fine, so am I. But I don't hide it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I've found in my life the most outwardly hateful people usually are cool. They'll pick up the restaurant check. It's the virtue signalers that are really fucking cutthroat and nasty individuals. And I've dealt with this shit going back into the early 90s when I did a magazine called Answer Me. It was a college feminist that went to the DA with it and, like, started obscenity charges against it. It was about a generation ago where the censors in American culture switched from being Bible-thumping Christians to being leftist radicals. And I've dealt with this shit in many ways. I've been fired from many jobs, been stalked and attacked by anti-racist skinheads in Portland, wrote a whole article about that, which is going in my new book, The New Church Ladies. And so for the past generation, everything they say about this racist, oppressive America is historically illiterate. That's not what's going on. For all these motherfuckers talk about being on the wrong side of history, they're working from a really old script. They want to talk about Emmett Till, but they will not touch modern interracial rape statistics. They want to talk about lynching. They will never touch the fact that more blacks kill each other in America every year than were lynched throughout American history. They definitely won't talk about interracial rape, which is about 99% non-white on white. They won't touch any of those things because they're working from a really fucking old script. And it gives me endless delight to see them flailing right now because they don't know what happened. They don't know what hit them with that election. And I'm glad they don't because maybe they've figured it out. And, you know, if you motherfuckers just shut up about white men, you probably would win every election for the rest of your life. But they couldn't help themselves. And who with any self-esteem is just going to bow down before that shit and swallow it? Do you need to be liked that much? I don't.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm not. I think it was the Buddha. He said something, I kindly refuse your gift of an insult. So you can say whatever the fuck you want. I don't care. Your approval doesn't mean anything to me. To my knowledge, I've not benefited from being white in any way that I can tell. And another thing about white privilege, one thing I always bring up is, in any argument, they talk about how bad black people have it in America. Here's a globe. I would like you to point to me a place on the earth that's majority black where blacks do better than they do here.
Right.
And you get called all kinds of names just for asking a sincere question. If there's no answer, be a man and say, you know what, there is no answer. They have it better here. But they can't do that. They are ideologues first, long before they're thinkers. And I have problems with ideologues across the political spectrum. I consider myself a skeptic, and I usually go against whatever the reigning moral orthodoxy is, and right now it's undeniably leftism. I mean, back when it was, you know, Bible-thumping Christians, I criticized them too. It's whoever wants to meddle in my life that I have a problem with. There was somebody in the Tacky's comments who said a long time ago that the main political divide is between people who want to be left alone and people who can't leave you the hell alone.
Right.
I don't mess with other people. I mean, people aren't forced to read anything I say or write. But you have these people taxing, guilt-tripping, meddling in my life. Then there's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've heard you in other interviews, and you're not that maybe, you know, into identity politics and all this stuff. And then, of course, a reaction at the same time to all of this has been the identitarian movement in Europe and the alt-right in America and stuff like that.
It's created by leftist identity politics. I really think most people were fine tolerating others as long as they didn't get constantly bashed. They created this fucking backlash. I think I'm able to function without identity politics because I'm whatever it is, sociopathic, autistic, a loser, a loner, whatever the fuck you want to call me. I don't have that herd instinct, and I explain this every time, and people think I'm worried about losing my career if I join something. It's like, no, because I get shit from all sides. But I understand, you know, being to prison, you realize people are tribal, and leftism doesn't account for that. And they've created a reactionary tribalism that I don't think they're going to be able to handle. They just did not know when to shut the fuck up about white males. And I think it was Steve Saylor who said that it's the crazy glue that holds the Obama coalition together. Hatred of straight white males. What white male who's not a fucking bootlicking masochist would settle for that shit? It's not virtuous. You're disgusting. I mean, I don't expect black people to just, you know, accept it. I expect everyone biologically to be concerned with their own survival and their own interests. I wouldn't begrudge that anyone else, but it's the hypocritical double standard that's just screaming. I mean, it was, you know, for example, the whole Oscars so white thing from about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's one group that is disproportionately represented in Hollywood, and it's not non-Jewish white people. You can't bring that up.
Oy vey, Jim.
Not one of them said that the Oscars were too Jewish.
Right.
That Hollywood was too Jewish.
Well, they're white, right?
So it was, Stein who wrote in the LA Times about 10 years ago, who owns Hollywood? Come on.
Yeah.
He researched every studio, every one of them Jewish owned. And I did an article about a dozen years ago. It was a satirical article called Judge Orders Hitler to Undergo Therapy. The storyline was that after World War II, Hitler moved to Argentina and then moved to Portland, and he told a writer for a local liberal weekly that the Jews run everything. And the Jewish mayor, the Jewish chief of police, and the Jewish head of the Chamber of Commerce demanded an apology. It's like, well, you know, you guys sort of prove the point when you ostracize someone who even says that. Prove them wrong. They never attempt to do that.
Yeah.
So it's the rational thinker in me that just bucks at that sort of thing.
Yeah, what we've seen happen, Jim, of course, is that things like the Chicago kidnapping of this guy. I don't know what level this guy was, retarded or whatever, but you had apologists later on out of CNN like Don Lemon and Simone Sanders and these people basically just downplaying it. Like, whoa, take it easy now with the hate speech laws or, you know, those kinds of issues. This was not evil. It's not. It's like they've taken no responsibility for creating this environment, the media, I mean.
These are the same people who immediately made Trayvon Martin and Ferguson and all the shit that had nothing to do with race, as far as I can tell, racial. It was NBC that almost started a race war. They took, because I covered the Trayvon case the weekend that it became a big story. I heard the full 911 call. And then all of a sudden, NBC, or MSNBC, one of them, presented this clip. The dispatcher will, you know, can you describe this person? No, he looks like trouble. He looks black. They edited that tape. The actual conversation was, she said something like, well, you know, he said he looks like trouble. Well, can you describe him? Is he white, black, Hispanic? He looks black. They spliced it to make it look like his motivation was racial. They took out the fact that he had his head smashed into the fucking concrete. And then George Zimmerman turned out to be an ignorant douche in a lot of other ways, but so was Trayvon Martin. Like this guy had any potential at all cut down at 17. The guy was a moron, an obvious drooling moron. You can't mention that, though. But they explicitly made that racial, and there was no evidence of anything racial except the fact that one was white and one was not, or whatever Zimmerman was. Here you have a tape where they're saying, white motherfucker, you don't deserve to live, you know, you're from Europe, you deserve all this shit, denying it's racial. It's like, you guys are fucking insane. You're either liars or you're insane. I don't care which. Needs to stop, and you need to fucking have your feet to the fire every fucking time this happens. In their worldview, blacks cannot be anything but the oppressed. It's like, yeah, okay, well, if you'd like to discuss actual statistics about interracial violence these days, I'm happy to. They don't want to. They are religious thinkers. They're dogmatic about it. And those are the people, dogmatists are the people I've had the most trouble with in my life. They're just not open-minded.
What's driving this, do you think? Because you kind of mentioned this already, but it's like they're overplaying their hand with their zealous kind of attitudes against white. They, you know, with all their fear of Nazism and racism and all these kinds of things, they're like creating this. They're creating a reaction to this, which is, yeah, you know,
they're
like that.
They're creating Nazis. They're right. A Nazi factory. And they don't even realize it. But who, I mean, you have to be, you actually have to truly be white privileged. In the real meaning of the term, economically, to just take this shit. I mean, the people who are actually standing up and fighting it, as far as I can tell, in America legally, are Asians. Because they're getting fucked over by affirmative action worse than whites, because they have higher test scores. to receive equal admissions consideration at Harvard, an Asian has to score 450 SAT points higher than a black person. Asians are starting to say, fuck this, I don't have anything to do with slavery. Like, why am I being penalized? And they talk about institutional racism. The only institutional legal racism these days is discrimination, you know, based on some idea of past oppression. And a lot of, you know, working class white people are getting fucked over for it. And as a writer, I mean, my market is tiny. The quotient people who would hire me just because I think differently is almost non-existent. And you have these complete, with Simone Sanders, big moon pie-faced idiot, you have these complete, like, barely literate non-entities getting literary awards and getting, you know, commentator jobs and book deals, spewing the same illiterate, egalitarian garbage. So, yeah, I guess I do take it personally. I'd have a much better career and be much better off financially if the world was warmer toward my ideas.
And if it was truthful, right? That's what it's about. If it was truthful.
Yeah, that's what triggers me. It's like, it's the emperor's new clothes. It's like, you're lying. That's not why. And that's when I ceased being a liberal back sometime late 80s, early 90s, when I just started noticing patterns. It's like, well, why do they do worse in African countries if they're being so held down here? You would think without all that oppression and racism, they flourish, but it's even worse. And I think Jared Taylor experienced something similar. He, as he tells it, he was a taxi ride between African countries. And it was a nice, orderly country. All of a sudden, he crosses the border, and it was hell. And he asked the taxi driver, and I could be getting points of this wrong, but it was the overall point. The taxi driver said, well, the country we just came out of is still ruled by the French. And that explains a lot. I don't believe in innate equality. That's so dumb. How can you believe in evolution? It's funny, these people, they're anti-Christian, and they claim to be Darwinists. How can you believe in evolution and believe everyone wound up equal? That doesn't
They don't anymore, I think, right? I mean, there's a couple of these kind of atheist, you know, YouTubers that have gone into this. They show these kind of skeptic communities and stuff, and they're like full of just feminists and SJWs and, you know, anti-racists.
They're not skeptical about cultural Marxism at all. They never touch it.
No.
Not skeptical about it, because I think it's equality. You know, it would be nice. It would be really nice if all disparities were caused by people being mean and unfair. It doesn't explain a lot of stuff. It doesn't explain, like, I did an article, because I was called Mr. Spelling Bee in grade school. I repped for the school, you know, the county Spelling Bee.
Nice.
And when I wrote this article 2 or 3 years ago, 8 of the last 9 national Spelling Bee champs were Indians, dot, not feather. And I ran the numbers. If everyone was equal, the odds of that happening were like 15, like a quintillion to one, like 15 zeros. It's like, well, maybe they're not equal. Maybe Indians have a more verbal aptitude. You look at Sanskrit, some of these words, you know, translated, they're like 40 letters. Even some of their names are ridiculously long. Maybe they're superior at that. That's not this horrifying. I guess, you know, if you believe in equality as this religious idea, it's horrifying and triggering and traumatizing. And you need to go cuddle up in a safe space and take your antidepressants, even pondering that people aren't equal. All of the evidence suggests they're not. Why is that such a big fucking deal? There's a way to get around that, I think, without bloodshed and nuclear war, but they won't even go there because I think, you know, globalists have a vested interest in herding everyone together under one, you know, managerial regime.
That's not going to work very well, though, is it, Jim, for them? I mean, it's the experiments that they're ongoing in right now, it's causing so much social upheaval that even the economy of countries are falling apart.
Yeah, I mean, even because what are the remaining examples that socialists use of socialism working in Scandinavia?
Yeah, it used to be Sweden and, you know, stuff like that, but not anymore.
Rape capital of the world,
yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
I think it was Oslo. I'm not sure if the report was accurate or not, but there was one year in which all of the rapes reported in Oslo were from foreigners. It's happening, and they're talking about overplaying their hand. And I think it was a member of the UK Labour Party who said that they use diversity just to rub the right's nose in it.
Yeah, and that's right.
You guys fucked with and taunted and, you know, flipped the bird and challenged people to fight, and now you're shocked they're fighting back? Especially like with, James O'Keefe revealed, the DNC guy. They hired people to go and start fights with Trump supporters.
Yeah.
Ted Kaczynski writes about this in the Unabomber Manifesto. He talks about this masochistic tendency. They will go provoke people into punching them. It's like you're mentally fucked up, number one, but what do you expect? And they still, they don't realize what happened. They are way behind the curve, and that's glorious to me. I think it might take them a generation to even catch up to what actually just happened. I mean, as triumphalist as they were, I am too. I wrote a little while ago on Twitter, like, I've been playing mental air guitar in my head for the past month at the fact that Donald Trump is going to be the new president.
Yeah.
Like, just glorious. Because you don't like to think you censor yourself or bite your lip. But it was at that moment I realized how much even I have over the past couple decades. Just, you know, so you don't get killed. But I was in New York the night of the election, eating at a cafe in Williamsburg the next morning. I had to stay in Williamsburg, not by choice, but we're eating outside, and some woman goes by on the phone. She's like, and all the damage he's going to do to this country. I out loud, I said, ha, 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 cry, cry, cry now. Taking joy in their pain, just like they have in the idea of my inevitable demographic demise and extinction. That's the thing about white, they talk about displacement, and you're just going to die out, and it's going to be great, and you have no idea. They think that everyone's going to get along then? How fucking naive.
No, the chaos.
Sheltered and protected are you?
Yeah.
And when they talk about things such as microaggressions, it's like, fuck you, go to prison, survive brain surgery, have your parents beat the shit out of you, struggle to put food on the table, then talk to me about you stupid Princess and the Pea microaggressions.
Well, isn't this what it's about, kind of the core issue here? You know, I've heard you also talk about the fact that, you know, people are, especially the young kids, I mean, they're so weak. They're just, I mean, it's pathetic. And most of them, this is an interesting point. We used to do shows about this years ago, but the drug epidemic, SSRIs, happy pills, I mean, some of these kids are, I mean, they're so offended and hurt by the world that this is what they live on now, you know?
I mean, if I could point to one thing I think has been more culturally destructive over the past generation, it's SSRIs and painkillers. And again, it was Ted Kaczynski in the Unabomber Manifesto. He said, you know, imagine a world that makes people so unhappy that they have to take a pill. But this is a tool for totalitarianism because it gets people, they'll accept conditions they would otherwise find intolerable just because they're drugged up on this shit.
But yeah, I don't want to improve, right, and fight against and change stuff. Right now they're just content with garbage, in a way.
On my meds, and my therapist just tweaks and adjusts my... It's like, do you realize what a suckling little baby you fucking sound like?
Yeah.
Have some fucking spine. That's why, are you a white supremacist? It's like, I hate white people right now more than I hate anyone because they're fucking pathetic. Like I said earlier, I understand why blacks would fight for their interests, Jews, anyone else. White people are just ready to bend over and give it all up, and I hate that. So yeah, I hate most white people.
But that's changing though, right? I mean, even with Trump, people have said that is a, you know, the silent majority slogan, right? That somehow is an expression of the fact that people are not, white people are not taking this anymore. They're starting to wake up to this because I think generally white people are just really nice. We're too kind. We're too nice, right?
Well, but was it Jared Taylor who says there's some fatal altruism gene?
Yeah, pathological altruism. I mean, yeah.
And again, with this social construct, race is not a social construct. You could take a skull, and a forensic technician could tell you what continent that a skull evolved on. Racism, that's a social construct. It has no fucking meaning, and it's morphed and it's metastasized. To the point where if you don't kill yourself for being white, you're a racist.
So, pretty much.
Not gonna do it. And I'm not that concerned about appearing virtuous to anyone else, and I'm gonna fall for that line of bullshit. These people don't realize they're gonna be the first to go. There was the Dead Kennedys punk rock band. They had some anti-Nazi song called Nazi Punks Fuck Off, and they said in a real Fourth Reich, you'd be the first to go. These white liberals, they don't. I mean, a black flash mob would pick them out of the crowd to beat the shit out of them because they radiate weakness. If you get a couple hardcore peckerwoods there, guys who lift weights or no martial arts, they're not going to touch them, at least not one-on-one. So, yeah, I'm all for self-defense for anybody based on their ethnicity or any of those sexuality, any of those bullshit terms that they come up with. But it reminds me in prison, too. There was a guy... Snake was his handle, which is like a stereotypical prisoner, convict, got it. Snake was this charismatic, if he had grown up on the right side of the tracks, he probably would have been president, because he was just very charismatic, knew how to handle people. Even the brothers all loved him. And he came from the California system, and he said, you know, like at San Quentin, you could have 100 American Indians hanging out. You could have 200 blacks hanging out in a group. If you had a half dozen Peckerwoods hanging together, they shut the prison down. And his theory was, well, when white people act in concert, we all know what happens. They rule the world. That cannot be permitted.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, again, then, if we... I'm not saying that we're talking about people who venerate history, understand history, when we talk about both SJWs and leftists, and but even elitists, right? I mean, wouldn't they at some level understand that it, for them, is going to be dangerous that they're pushing white people over the edge, advocating for the genocide and all that? Like, are they really expecting that there isn't going to be a backlash against this?
I'd only be speculating, and I hesitate to get into anyone, crawl into anyone else's mind, because usually it's a horror show, but, you know, to discern their motives, I would guess that most of them think they'll be safely ensconced in gated communities when all this conflict happens. And I think it was K-Mac who said that, you know, this paves the way for a totalitarian police state. They're creating a situation where there will be eternal conflict, and that serves those in power well, because they'll just, they'll ramp up the control. Not sure. I mean, I guess, you know, having experienced the brunt force of the government after being incarcerated, I'm all for decentralizing government as much as possible and placing it more and more into local hands and individual hands. But yeah, I mean, if there's going to be a worldwide war against white people, then I guess you have to adopt a different strategy.
Right. Well, exactly. And that was kind of one of my points early with identity politics and stuff like this, that, you know, you personally might not see the association with white people, but other people will, just because of the fact that you're white, you know?
I get it in the sense of being targeted or taxed or scapegoated for it, absolutely. As far as fellowship and those things, it's still not an instinct that I have. I'm white defensively. It's like, don't tread on me for my skin color. Otherwise, as far as going to pool parties and stuff, just not my bag, not my style. And, you know, people hate me for that, fine. I don't hold it against them. It's not that I'm offended. It's just not, doesn't fit my psychology.
What's your view on what's happening in Europe right now with the rise of Islam and the open borders? And it goes hand in hand with what you mentioned earlier, by the way, when we have a situation where many, many tens of thousands of people are now flooding out of Africa to go to these horrible racist countries in Europe, right?
This is what Gaddafi predicted. He said, if you take me out, Europe's going to be flooded with African refugees. And who took him out? Hillary Clinton. And that's exactly what's happening. My oldest brother, who was 17 years older than me, was a deaf mute, not from birth. He contracted scarlet fever, and my mom didn't take him to the hospital in time. He was a photographer, and when I was like 8 years old in 1969, he was 25, he went to Paris, and the next morning his dead body was found on the banks of the River Seine. He'd been strangled with his own belt, stabbed to death, 30 to 40 times. And, I kind of have an anti-French thing as a result of how they handled it. I've got some French blood in me. My, paternal grandmother's surname was Ducharme, was French-Canadian. But I remember my mom getting the phone call, and this animal wail came out of her. I was standing outside our screen door on a sunny September afternoon in 1969, and we had to go to the church, Catholic church, to get the $1,500 the French government was demanding to ship his body back. And I did the calculation. That's about $10,000 now. And they sent him back, and even creepier, we got a postcard saying, I'll see you back on the 27th, or whatever the date was. Yeah, he got back to Philadelphia that day, but in a wooden box, and opened up the casket. There were all the in French certificate of embalmment, everything. They didn't embalm him. He was decaying and still in the suit that he'd been stabbed to death in. Got him a bit of a thing with the French just because of that. But I was in Paris in 85. I've been to Europe once. I was there 6 weeks in 1985 and wandered into the northern side. I think it was the Cathedral of the Sacred Heart that I wanted to see. But I had to get off at the metro station. There was an Arab neighborhood, and this could be completely delusional on my part. I got the sense that he had wandered into the wrong neighborhood and might have been killed by someone who just, you know, saw him as weak, or, you know, immediately when he, you know, they tried to communicate with him and he couldn't talk, they killed him.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. But it's suicidal. They think it's virtuous, but they don't know what's, and so many of these people that are dictating policy live such sheltered lives and ignorant about the law of the jungle and how human struggles work, and they don't realize how much shit they're causing. So yeah, I hate all those people, no matter anyone who has power over me, I guess I naturally despise. And I think that's natural. Part of it's jealousy, part of it's just resentment that I don't get to call the shots.
Well, what do you think is going to happen with Trump now then? Is there any of these kinds of issues that really genuinely is going to be raised to the forefront? I mean, a lot of people from the alt-right and everything, they've, you know, jumped on Trump, and it's a good step in the right direction. But how far do you think that the Trump administration is going to go with these issues, like the border and these things? Is it going to happen?
Well, I guess what disappoints a lot of them is he's a pretty committed Zionist. Yes.
Right.
And his son-in-law is Jared Kushner, who's an Orthodox Jew, and Ivanka is converted. one thing that, I mean, people call him stupid. It's like, really? Okay, I'd like to see you take on both political parties and the entire media and win. How anyone can't see how that guy is a genius, at least psychologically. And as far as I know, he was given an inheritance of about $40 million and is worth about $4 billion now. He took every dollar that was given to him and multiplied it by 100. A stupid person couldn't do that. But I think Jared Taylor was right. He doesn't think about things racially. But he is just a big, wet, loud, sloppy fart in the face of all this madness that has preceded us. That's why people hate him. But he has a spine. And I guess in a way he reminds me, as self-serving as this is, of myself. Like, I went to prison, I never apologized. So I didn't feel bad. And I don't care who fucking dislikes me or thinks I'm a monster. He has that same attitude. He's straight with himself, and that's all that matters. So I admire him. I mean, I think the main danger is just he's still against an overwhelming establishment. Who knows if they're going to put the kibosh on everything he tries to do. I don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see that. And just the fact that there is a candidate that clearly the elite hated. I mean, everyone was against him, from the media to most politicians.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, the Bill Kristols and National Reviews, they were more dead set against him than any kind of... I mean, Democrats were hoping he was the nominee. They thought he was destined for failure. But even, I mean, as dumb, like, he explained to me, he's like, I didn't campaign in California, New York. I was going to lose anyway. Because that's not how you get elected president. You get elected president by the Electoral College. So he went after the individual states, and he won. He lost only because of California. California, I think, gave 4 million more votes to Hillary Clinton. You remove California, which I hope happens one day, he would have won the popular vote. But again, he's so much smarter. A friend of mine says, you know, he's playing fourth dimension chess with these people, and they don't even realize it. They don't know what fucking hit them, and it's glorious to watch. Yeah, all the excuses and Russians and fake and everything, just flailing. And I wrote on Twitter a little while ago, it's like, you ever like stomp a bug, but like half of it's still alive and the antenna are flailing? That's the left right now. They do not know what's happened, and I take sadistic glee in it.
Yeah, and also, yeah, me too.
They've aggressively made my life uncomfortable in a lot of ways my entire adulthood. So I think it's righteous rage at this point, but everyone thinks that.
What do you think the counter reaction is going to be to this by the left? Because surely they're either not going to just lay down and die.
I think they're just going to try. I mean, one could argue that Ireland and, you know, the landmass that's now the United States was conquered with demographics. They kept, you know, the British kept sending Scottish Protestants over from Scotland, and at least dominated Northern Ireland that way. And that's, you know, the Native Americans were fighters. I mean, that's one thing you got to give them compared to modern white people. They fought, but they were just overwhelmed with, well, not just numbers, but technology. So I think they're just going to continue planning demographic decline for whites. And that's one thing that struck me too. All this shit about the Republicans, racist. I can't remember the last time a Republican mentioned race, except it's some clumsy attempt to, you know, bring up a Latino to play salsa music at a convention or something. All the Democrats ever, I would watch some compilation. It was on NPR. about like making it all about white people. Election Eve, all they're talking about, well, you know, if Hispanics and this district didn't vote, but over the trend, they're planning right like white demographic irrelevance. They're the ones making it about race. Bernie Sanders, you ever see these pictures of him with Killer Mike, the big fat black rapper from Atlanta? He's walking arm in arm with him down some city street, and he's also like fist bumping him at some barbershop in Atlanta. Hillary Clinton's got some little Mexican kid in a matador outfit with a sombrero. She's like, they were open with their racial appeals.
Yeah.
Trump didn't mention the phrase white people once, ever. I saw his, it was almost exactly a year ago that I went to his rally in Atlanta. And coming home, I'm on deadline. I know my topic is, I went to the Trump rally. It's like, well, what's the theme? It's like, well, what's the big criticism? Oh, racism. Oh, fuck, he didn't mention race once the entire speech. He was all talking about outsourcing and Carrier going to Mexico and Apple being made in China. It was all economic nationalism. He didn't mention race once, but the Democrats are fucking obsessed with it. And I know, like, in the alt-right, oh, Democrats are the real race. That's not what I'm saying. It's like the people who make it racial. Like, a lot of people just don't really give a fuck about it until, like, their noses are rubbed in it. Democrats have always made it racial, you know, when they were the KKK party and now when they're the Black Lives Matter party. But it's just projection. Oh, you guys all, nah. Republicans are terrified to mention race, still. Again, I can imagine, like, if Trump actually made it racial, I wonder what would happen. He might, if he runs in 4 years and made it racial, he might actually win the popular vote resoundingly. That was called the Saylor strategy. Steve Saylor said Republicans need to just become the white people's party and they'd never lose.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that, you know, the biggest demographic, the majority still in America is just completely neglected in this way. You know, as you said, Trump, he was up there on stage. It's like, oh, look, a Latino, come up on stage. I love you. You know, or like the one right. Black guy had with him or whatever. But he never.
It was obviously a joke. Yeah. And he got like, they didn't even get the humor in that.
Right, right.
Yeah, but then. Yeah, but you look at the Democratic Convention, it's all just, you know, people of color and LGBTQ and yeah. Muslims and identity. Naturally created that backlash. And I wrote, like, the week after the election, I said, well, if you're going to play identity politics, make sure your enemy isn't the majority.
Right.
And that's what they stumbled in ass backwards. They didn't realize it. I mean, these rich people like Hillary Clinton, I mean, life of privilege, but somehow this need to identify with the oppressed, I guess, just to get over their insane guilt for being richer than the crackers that they shit on all the time. The deplorables. I mean, deplorables, yeah. Really, like, really, you really want to compare behavior or especially intelligence. That's one thing that bugs the shit out of me about some of these stereotypes about poor whites, about intelligence. I did an article about 5 years ago. There was a big teachers cheating scandal in Atlanta, where they basically just took the test, erased the students' answers in pencil, and put in the correct answers, and they were caught. And a lot of them got fired, and I think some might have even gone to jail. But I searched throughout Georgia, okay, where do black and white students test equally? Because they talk about, oh, if we only threw more money. So I took black students in one Atlanta neighborhood, and I took white students in Rabun County in northern Georgia where Deliverance was filmed, like the quintessential hillbillies. And it turned out that the black students had more spent on their education, but their test scores were roughly the same, except in half the cases the black students cheated and the white students didn't. So all of these, and I keep saying, like, honestly, show me where blacks have it better when they're not around whites. And well, if you call me names, then you kind of look like you have a weak argument. And that's, I mean, I think that's what's behind hate speech and all this other shit. They can't have that argument. They'd lose in a minute if you actually had this honest conversation. So they'll just try to shut down the conversation.
Jim, let's take a break here. I just want to mention, of course, your books again. We have, of course, the Redneck Manifesto, How Hillbillies, Hicks, and White Trash Became America's Scapegoats. There's other books out there, too. Is Amazon the best place to go to pick up copies of your books, or do you have a shop on the website?
I guess jimgo.net when I come out with the Answer Me anthology and New Church. Like, there you go. There's the cover of of the new Answer Me anthology. And then underneath that is the new Church Ladies, with the cover done by a rather notorious cartoonist who doesn't want to be named, but I think people can guess who it is if they know about my history.
Garrison? Is it Garrison?
No.
No?
Even worse.
Even worse. The boat sinker?
I can't, you know, he doesn't want me to mention it.
All right, it's fine.
He's contributed to Answer Me in the past. But, yeah, those are the two books coming out. I guess my website's the only place you can get them signed for the same price. But, yeah, Amazon. I did the Answer Me anthology, Shit Magnet, Redneck Manifesto, Life Never Ends Well, Headache Factory. I did a small ebook about Idaho. I guess, you know, I got about 7 print books at this point. And over 600 articles for Tacky Mag at this point, which can, I think, eventually be made into a bunch of books.
Yeah, you're producing content all the time, tons of books for people to check out, and, of course, follow Jim's writing. He's on Twitter as well. I think we have a definitely check out his Twitter. I think, are you the only one who actually doesn't follow anybody? Nah, there's got to be a few that doesn't do that.
I'm just not sociable. And plus, I've had so many... I've had much more unpleasant experiences with fans than with antagonists, because you get a certain type of borderline personality disorder fan, and all you have to do is say, no, that's okay, I'll drive myself to the airport, and then you have a stalker for life. So I tend not to interact. I just realized, you know, a lot of times I'm arguing with people who aren't honest and don't have the honor to say, maybe you have a point there, and it's a fool's errand. I mean, I will check comments on my articles sometimes to see if I got something wrong or a date wrong or a fact wrong. But for the most part, it's punching down to engage with a lot of these people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Way too much time spent on that when we have bigger fish to fry. But, yeah.
It's honest. Then you're not going to get there.
No, of course.
If we're dumb and or dishonest, there's no point.
Jim, let's take a short break right here. We're going to continue, ladies and gentlemen, in the second hour with Jim Goad. Much more to talk about. I'm going to ask him a bit more about the situation with Russia and this whole fake news thing. This thing just exploded with Trump. We're going to get into the JQ a bit more, his views on the alt-right and stuff like that. So it's going to be fun. So stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break. We'll see you on the other side.
The one I love don't want me hanging. With a stranger at a party in her home, and I'm here at the tavern getting stoned. Cause if I gotta go, I'll go down swinging where there's life and laughter, booze and pop, and lots of sad, sad singing. I'll sober.
We're going to continue with Jim Goad in the second hour at redicemembers.com. Head on over there, get a subscription, and get full access to our archives, including the second hour of all of our shows, video interviews, live shows, and everything else we have there for you. Back to our start in 2006 when we started exploring alternative media subjects. So definitely check it out. It's only €6 per month. That is about $6. And our subscription is either a 3-month recurring one or from 3 months up to 2 years as a one-time payment. So whatever works for you. So this is really the best way to support what we do, making sure that we can continue with the radio show, also make additions to the live TV show, bring on more reporters, correspondents, and expand the segments. And of course, make more video material and public live shows as well when we have those events that are essential to our interests. So yeah, redicemembers.com, go there, sign up right now. We will talk to you on the other side of the break. Thank you for listening.